Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. If you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Hey, this is comedian Dale Harrison, and you're watching Mr. Media.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter or Facebook. On today's show, I'll talk to comedian Dale Harrison. Stick around. Dale Harrison has some strongly held beliefs about racism, about tipping, about men's private parts, and more stuff like that. And it's a good thing, too, because Dale Harrison is a comedian. Her job is to tell you what she thinks about the world around her, absorbing her personal reality and repackaging it to make you and me laugh at the absurdity of it all. She recently landed a residency at the Lab inside the Hollywood Improv. Her show, titled Stand Up, Storytelling, and Sanging, is a mix of stand-up comedians and storytellers, as well as a live band. To find out when she'll be on stage there or in your town, please check out her listings at the website DaleHarrison.com. And that's one L in Dale. Now, I watched a few minutes of Dale Harrison video on her YouTube channel and burst out laughing. And that's all I needed to book her here. Dale Harrison, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm all tickled at your intro of caught a case of racism.
And we know where that came from.
Yeah.
Straight out of the act. I know, but the thing I got to ask you about, and the thing that made me just burst out laughing, I had headphones on, I'm watching the YouTube channel, you started talking about tipping, right?
Yes.
And you have some pretty strong opinions about how some groups are better tippers than others. How do you come to that? And I'll leave it up to you if you want to point out what groups you're talking about.
You mean the white males that have tipped me so deliciously throughout my career as a former waitress? Yes. Now I want to say this, black males tip better in the strip clubs. Okay. But when we're talking about restaurant tipping, I worked as a waitress and it surprised me because I just was like, I was new to waitressing full time, just until before I did stand up, because I told you it was a tech support before. So I wouldn't even think of a waitress job before. But, running to your people like, oh, my God, they seem so cool, and leaving the table feeling like a South Carolina white woman with a Confederate flag in her hand. Like, I know y'all, we wasn't cool. We vibing to music and singing tunes. And after that, I don't have not $1 on the table on a $300-something bill. And this has happened repeatedly, So of course I'm feeling like now, after that, when they started coming in, I'll be like, oh, right over there, this section is closed. Because I got to get my money.
Where do you think that comes from? Why don't they tip better?
I think white kids, Asian kids, I think they're taught to tip little, when they're younger. I remember when my mother used to tip, I would be like, why? I could not understand, why, I'm thinking of me, because I'm an only child, and my mother's like, no, we're going to leave the money there for them, but I still did not get that as a black female until I started working at restaurants and, you know, then I would be like, now not only do I tip generously, whether the service is good or bad, because I've been there in that position before. And I know you could be having a bad day. I know that they have to get their money. But I think that generally when I see white kids come into restaurants, their parents is like, oh, no, honey, I'm going to let you leave the tip. They're training them right then and there to give that money, you know. So then I would have a group of like white kids come in and they tip me higher than the table of ethnic adults that's sitting right next to me. You know what I'm saying? So I would be like, no. I'm gonna have to stick to the whites when it comes to serving tables.
Ethnic adults, huh?
Whites and blacks over 40, because blacks over 40 are white too. Okay, so.
Now, what do you think that is? Is it a lack of respect for people, you know, working for tips, or is it just I want to keep my money?
I think it's a lack of knowledge for what it is, because Indians are horrible tippers too. So, and when I speak to Indians, some of them. But the few that I've spoken with, they feel like you shouldn't even be working this job. So don't even be worrying about making all of your money with tips. You should have a regular job, because, of course, they go out after, you know, you very rarely run into an Indian waitress unless you had an Indian restaurant, you know. Mm-hmm. So they don't support those jobs. And they're like, don't. You know, we're going to give you the bare minimum, basically the 10%, you know, and now my mom is like trying to pay off her house. So now she's like back to the 10%, you know. So but I think what it is as a black female in her 20s that was not tipping people at the time. One, it was my karma. Okay. And two, it's my it was my lack of knowledge for that position and them only making $2.13 an hour. But now it's like $5, and you know, raise it up to like $8 when you're not working tables. The lack of knowledge of how low the money is and how this is customary in our culture, that, you know, that people live by tipping.
So that gives us an entree to go to this other big topic for you, which I kind of hinted at the introduction, which is racism, which is there's a little bit of that in talking about tipping, and I'm being very careful, not so much to myself single out any groups, but because I may have family members who are watching and who might be I don't want to say. We can talk off the air about that. Would you say, I mean, in the last 8 years, and I'm guessing you have continued to be African American through those 8 years and before that you weren't Anglo before that, you know.
I'm actually honorary Anglo now.
Well, okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Then I'm very interested in your thoughts on this. Has racism changed in your view over the last 8 years? Has having an African American president, has that affected racism in America?
I want to say racism in America is, you know, everything affects it. African-American president, female president, white male running. I mean, this country was born on racism. You know what I'm saying? That's what has built this country Columbus thinking he was somewhere else and discovering the wrong, and then the Indians being here and them killing them all off. And then the blacks coming by slave trade and the Vietnamese coming by sex slave trade. And this country has just been born on hardcore racism. And it just, you know, it's up to us, the people, to rid the racism in our community. You know, I feel like you and me can cure that local racism that seems to spread throughout the world. But oh yeah, I think, you know, having a black president, you know, this has been our best president in my opinion, you know, just the Obamacare and the gas prices and the student loan cap with the interest and the debt forgiveness and the car industry and the Wall Street industry. I mean, it's, you know, we've had some significant strides with this president, and people will still be like, they hate Barack Obama. And I'm like, I don't understand what that is, but it's purely race, and it's taught. And, you know, and I even have a joke about it, Bob, where I'd be like, remember the old school racism, you know, with, it was just so much fun back in the day when you could, you know, you and your white girlfriends could look at some Asians and be like, oh, they all look just alike, girl. And then your white friends walk off and you be like, girl, they stink. You know what I'm saying? And then your white friends be like, girl, I don't care about their skin. I would never want that nappy hair. And then the other white girl be like, and her father is not even there. Girl, we can't even do that no more because we're in Germany, they can call each other bullhead. They can be like, fuck you, you pig. You know, because they all see themselves as German.
Right.
Somehow in America, we could not insult each other like that because, some about the skin color.
What do you think racism will be like under a Donald Trump presidency?
I think it will be so blatant. I think that's the most accurate word, because here's a man that says, you know, I was just looking at the commercials on TV and he was like, the Mexicans come over and they're rapists and we're going to build a wall and we're going to round them up in the most humane way. And I'm like, round them up? That sounds like slavery, you know? I think under his leadership.
Doesn't sound particularly humane to round up anybody or anything.
Round up anyone. No, not at all.
Isn't that Roundup? That's the chemical that they use to kill weeds, right?
Roundup is also a senior citizens program. that delivers meals to senior citizens. So, you know, we're just totally not using Roundup in the right form, no matter what we're using it for. You know, that's just not the right term. But I think it would be I think Donald Trump needs to have been senator or some kind of local governor. You know, I could see like an Arnold Schwarzenegger running for president, you know, because he's been in an official law position, you know, a position in the government. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump, you can't go from apprentice to running the free world like this. No, we need experience, you know?
We do have a few steps generally between.
Yeah, I can't wait to November 9th so that the whole world can say in unison, you're fired.
Now, do you in your act, do you ever talk about politics? Do you ever talk about Trump or Obama?
I do talk about them a hint in my act, but I mainly talk about them on my digital web series called Up Late TV Show. And because he's so entertaining, like this man, you know, I'm so glad he's running as a person who has to come up with funny things to say on video and on stage, because it's, you know, it's downright exciting to see the next move. You know, he doesn't, you know, he's got all these women popping up. I'm like, is that Donald Trump or Bill Cosby? I don't even, is that the white Bill Cosby? What's going on? Does he have a star on the Walk of Fame? We got to pull that too. Come on. Let's get it. So this guy is entertaining, though.
And did you see this week, actually, that 200 people walked out of an Amy Schumer concert because she started talking about Trump?
I did not see that this week. God, Amy has just been – is she in support of Trump? Is that why they did that?
No, no, no. She was definitely not in support of Trump.
I love Amy.
Well,
so I guess Trump supporters were there to support her, and they were not with it.
They were. I think they were a little surprised to hear that she was going to talk about Trump in her act. That was, I guess, that was a surprise to her. So, but that gives me a chance to ask you. I mean, who, you know, you've been a comedian for many years now. Who has been important to you as, you know, as maybe a role model or someone, you know, that whose work you enjoy, you look up to?
Yeah, the three people that really come to mind when I look up enjoy, like really on enjoyment, is I really laugh out loud at Dave Chappelle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just really enjoy, that is a person that, you know, I'm a straight fan in the audience. You know, I caught him like maybe 2 months ago at the Comedy Store, and he was just so funny and so raw and so natural and coming up with jokes. And of course, he had the crowd like not able to use a phone, you know, because, you know, he's coming building a new set. So he wants to not have that stuff all over the web. Another person that I extremely laugh at, and I feel like I'm much more similar to him, is a Cedric the Entertainer. You know, everybody loves Cedric. Mm-hmm. He's funny. He's not political. He's a great actor. He's in movies. You know, he's just kind of like an all around American kind of guy. And that's what I like. I really don't get into politics too much because, one, it's so divisive. Like, the only reason I'm into it now is because I live with my aunt who watches MSNBC every second when she gets home. You know what I'm saying? So I enjoy Chris Matthews. I'm like, Chris Matthews for president. That's who really needs to be running. That is the funniest guy ever. So I've gotten into it now because that's what I'm watching. But generally, I don't like to get into it with my audiences because I want to have us in unison all the time. You know, I'm trying to join us together as opposed to being like, well, you know, I like this person for this, but I will comment on it. If it's something ridiculous, like, you know, women popping up out the blue. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's in there, too. You know? And then Wanda Sykes. That's my third person. Mm. I love Wanda. I loved Wanda. I fell in love with her when she was on the Chris Rock show. That is when I just fell in love with her. She was so funny as an actress on there, and I really enjoy her comedy too.
Wanda's great. She did that. She did the New Adventures of Old Christine.
Yes, I love that show too.
And I'm trying to remember. Was she on Veep for a while too? Alpha House. She was on Alpha House.
Oh, I didn't see her on Alpha House.
She was. I think she played a U.S. senator on that. She's very good on that too.
Yeah.
And then how did you get into the business? Because we've talked a little bit before, and I know that you have waitressed, you have been in tech support. I think I saw mention that you may have started, you have stripped.
Been a stripper.
Been a stripper.
Yeah.
I mean, where does comedy fit into that? None of those sound particularly funny.
Well, all three of them together sound hilarious. As a person that has done all three, tech support, strip, you name it, I've done it all. My grandma has always had me in something when I was a little girl, like, you know, from plays to choir to cheerleading to, you know, drama team to everything. And then, of course, when my grandma was who raised me before I moved with my mother, and then my mother continued the mission, choir and, you know, she was always like, okay, you got to do something. Okay, well, you got to pick one. You got to do something, you know? So I just was picking one. And then I'm so glad I worked at the strip club because it was there. Those girls, of course, when you're butt naked, you don't have to, you don't have any reserves on the information you'll give up to your coworkers because everybody's butt naked. So we can pretty much be honest with each other. But it was there I started to, like, tell them funny stories. Like, we would have slow nights, and we would be in the back kicking it, and I would be telling them all my funny stories. And they would be like, oh, no, 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 no. You got to tell these on stage because, you know, I would be telling about my grandmother, my great-grandfather. You know, my great-grandfather was this man who would, you know, he was 78 years old, and he was so nosy. You know, like, he just, you know, old people are already nosy, but, like, he was nosy, and he couldn't see. So rather than asking questions like what's going on with the neighbors, like if they were moving out, he would just go right up to the driveway and just look at them move, like stare, and would not, like, you know, he wasn't like down the street staring. He would like go all the way down there to look at them, and they would be like, Mr. Owens, can we help you with something? He'd be like, no, I just came over here to see what y'all was doing.
Jeez.
So, you know, all of those stories, and there were some actresses in that same club that I worked at, and they were like, no, we're getting you on stage, and, you know, they dragged and talked, and, I mean, they just was so hard-pressed, and I always kind of wanted to do it, but I really wanted to write because I didn't have the balls to do it, so, you know, my friend was going to an open mic, and I went with her, and, you know, everybody was like, you curse too damn much, but you are so funny, you know, and I just continued it from there.
So it was your fellow strippers who encouraged you
yes.
to do that, but you didn't get up on stage at the strip clubs and tell jokes.
Oh my God,
that's what I wanted to clear up. Yeah, because no. I mean, my limited experience over the years with the strip clubs, and I've been married a long time now, so I haven't really done a lot of it in recent years, but those were always kind of sad places. You didn't see a lot of men smiling and laughing, and a lot of women either. None of the women ever looked too happy. So I thought – when I heard that you had kind of started in comedy when you were stripping, I thought, I must be missing something here.
Oh – no, people are laughing and talking at a strip club, but it's not with each other. The yeah. girls are laughing at the guys from the green room, and the guys are laughing at the girls in the car, okay? We're all like this, you know, it's really a fantasy world. You know what I'm saying? Like when I even tell people, like one time I was at the club, and this guy, this older guy, you know, that I would see all the time, you know, he walks up to me, and I started working at the strip club, and then I got fired from my tech support job because I, you know, me and the boss, we hated each other. And then I was coming there more often, you know, because I didn't have a job then. And he was like, oh God, sweetheart, I'm starting to see you up in here every night. What's going on? And, you know, and I couldn't say this to him, but I was thinking to myself, I was just getting ready to ask you the same thing. Like, like, I see I'm not the only one with low self-esteem over here. What's going on with you?
Now, I just thought of somebody else I want to ask you about. We were talking about comics before. What about someone like Leslie Jones?
I love Leslie Jones. Now, that is another funny lady. And I really appreciate, you know, let me tell you why I appreciate Leslie. She works hard. She is so funny. And she is not the typical beauty. She's still a beauty in her own right. But she is not, you know, she's not Kerry Washington that made it to SNL. She is Leslie Jones, you know, and you talk about, you know, Grace Jones' distant cousin, you know what I'm saying, that made it to SNL. And that's why I really love her story. She worked hard and it paid off in the biggest way, you know, and she waited behind a lot of people, right, even though she had been doing it longer. So that's why I really love her. And then her comedy is just so funny. She doesn't have, like, you know, she is a similar, you know, she's in that Cedric the Entertainer line where she's not going to go too political. She's going to talk about, you know, she's going more autobiographical where she's talking about her life. So I love that, you know.
Have you ever crossed paths with her through the years?
Yeah. And I gave her one of my T-shirts. And Leslie, I just want to say, I want to see you in one of my T-shirts. Damn it!
That's one of the hot chicks T-shirts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I admire her a lot because she's not a young kid. It took her a long time to get her shot. And she's, you know, best anyone can tell, she stayed true to who she is. Every yes. time you see her, she's, no matter what character she is, it's still Leslie Jones.
It's still Leslie Jones. Yeah. And, you know, they hired her to write for Sashir, you know? So, and then, you know, popping up, she's in a lot of the scenes now. So, you know, that's what I mean. I really love, she stayed true to herself. You know, a lot of times you feel like, oh, I gotta be this way. I gotta fit into the mold. That's the whole reason I moved out to LA too, because I feel like when you're black out here, you can just be your regular old black self. You know, I feel like in New York, all the blacks are all the blacks that are like getting the opportunities, you know, are the blacks with a lot of white friends, you know? Mm. Whereas out in LA, you know, the white people are like, the white people that I meet, they be like, oh, no, Del, we want to see you perform in front of a black crowd. Like, they want to see you be yourself, you know? And I just feel like you can be more of yourself. You can just be as racist and, you know, in New York, we can be racist and honest and funny because everybody's funny in New York. But I feel like the black people that are, you know, from the hood. Now, mind you, they also don't play in the white places. And, you know, when you have those mainstream places, that's also where the people who can put you on another scale where you can make, you know, see a financial increase from your efforts. I feel like, you know, a lot of the blacks aren't playing there, but also it's because when you're going into those places, it's, you know, everybody is just like, oh, I grew up in an all Jewish, I grew up in an all this, you know, it's never like just this, you know, black, you know, regular black person, you know, if that's the politically correct term.
That's fine. I mean, there is still this split, though, that, I mean, you're playing the Hollywood Improv, right?
Yeah.
Right? You're doing that on a regular basis. But throughout, certainly in the South, there are black clubs and white clubs in terms of seeing comedy and music.
Yeah.
And a lot of times there's not a lot of crossover between the two. So are you saying, like in New York, that it's more of a mix with the clubs?
I'm saying in New York, the people that I see regularly crossing over are the black people that I see regularly crossing over are the black people with a lot of white friends. You know, it's like that. Oh, I grew up in an all white everything area. You know, all white friends areas. Like, you know, when you see the blacks, you know, there's no black comedy clubs in New York. I think there's one, and you know, the owner has had physical fights with people. So you see where there's no black comedy clubs in New York. I'm not going to be there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've got to go where the opportunity is, and you're not going to go to a place where, you know, the staff, you know, you might get into it with the staff. Like, that's something that's never going to happen. You know, when you're at a Caroline's, you might have a little tiff with someone, but it's not going to turn physical. It's clearly going to be misunderstanding. So, and unfortunately, like even in LA, we have the black, you know, we have a black comedy club here. But when you think about it, marketing yourself as a business, you know, like as a black female comedian that plays to the universal audience. When I think about people wanting to see that, you know, the black comedy club, they're not coming over to Manchester by the airport. Like Manchester's like, you know, in an urban area. They're coming to the Hollywood Improv. And I like, you know, I used to always tell my friends, I want to play white comedy club on black weekend, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where it's like the blacks and the whites that come to see black people, that's who I want to come see me, you know?
I get that. And I was going to ask you, we were talking about specific comedians. Have you met any of your, you know, heroes, heroines, if you will, who are comedians? And have there been those that have thrilled you, and then those who have disappointed you once you've actually, you know, gotten up close and personal?
You know, when I first met Steve Harvey, you know, I got to say this story. Because Steve Harvey, that's the guy that I just Google him here and there because he is just so motivating, you know. But when I first met him, you know, I was like, oh, my God, Steve. I was just moved to New York, coming out of my tech support job, you know, just getting some lunch. And I saw him walking on the street. And I was like, oh, my God, Steve Harvey. And, I was walking up to him. And I was like, oh, I just started comedy. And, you know, he had a security guard there with him. And the security guard was blocking me, you know, like I was some old groupie, you know, and I'm looking at him like, motherfucker, like, nigga, don't nobody want to fuck Steve Harvey. Come on now. Okay, let's
oh my God.
Okay, like if this was, I don't even know who it was. Okay,
can I quote you on that?
Can
I quote you on that? Ain't nobody wants to fuck Steve Harvey. Sorry,
you
Steve.
Can quote me on that because he is married, and thank God nobody wants to have sex with him because, you know, I'm sure that really helps out him, his third marriage, and he is so in love with Marjorie. And me too, Marjorie. I love you too. But, you know, he was taken back. But I was like, well, I don't want to touch him. I just want to say hello and just say, you know, how are you? And I'm doing comedy too. And he was like, oh, you just started doing comedy? And he was like, well, how old are you? You know, and I was like, oh, I'm 29, you know. And he was like, okay, well, hang in there. Here, baby, you know. So I was like, hang in there. He was like, yeah, you know, hang in there. So once he said that, I could see right then and there, it was a tough day for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a bad day. And now that I look back on, like, 12 years, like, you know, I've been doing comedy 11 years, I really appreciated him taking the time to tell me something motivational, because it is tough in this business. You know, you about to experience some serious rejection. So I appreciated that. But that, you know, and then when I met Eddie Murphy, let me tell you when I met Eddie Murphy. Oh, my God. I hope I blow up, but I hope this doesn't come back to bite me. But, you know, I'm at the Laugh Factory and I meet Eddie Murphy. Now, mind you, I've only been doing comedy like 7 months. So, okay, so I think I'm the shit then, okay? Once I have the confidence, you know. So I see Eddie Murphy. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God, Eddie Murphy. Any advice for the next young star, you know? And he was like, yeah, never take anybody's advice. So I was like, okay. I was like, well, you know, I'm gonna be at this place over here. I forget what place it was, but Bob, it was the hood. And I was inviting Eddie Murphy out to the hood. So he was like, I was like, well, I'm gonna be at this something bar, whatever, you know, Who Can Two bar over in Inglewood, you know. And he was like, picture that, me coming to see you, you know. So of course I didn't say anything because we at the Laugh Factory, but I'm looking at him like, yeah, motherfucker, you human, ain't you? Okay, I'm inviting everybody to see me, not just you, but yeah, Eddie Murphy, you know, I'm just inviting everybody. But now I'm like, you know, as 12-year-in comedian that hasn't even blown up yet, the nerve of me to invite Eddie Murphy out to the hood to see some new jack that was went right over there and almost bombed. Okay, so
oh man,
you know, your innocence is just, you know, when you first start something that you're passionate about, you know, that innocence is just golden. You are fearless. You don't care about politics. You'll walk right up to the person. If we can just keep that, you know, we get so much further because you don't care. You know what I'm saying?
That's amazing. That's great. So in a matter of 5 minutes, you've destroyed illusions about Steve Harvey and Eddie Murphy.
And Eddie Murphy.
Wow. I should just start throwing names at you. What?
Saturday Night Tater was right? Cool as I don't know what. He hosted, I just was in this big old, American Black Film Festival comedy competition, Comedy Wings competition in Miami. I was one of the finalists. And he, Ascension Entertainer, was a host. So we got to meet there. We also met when he had a show here in LA, and I happened to get on the last edition of that show. And it was a live stand-up show. And we just said hello, but we didn't really like meet. And then, you know, at the in Miami, we got a chance to meet and, you know, just say, hey, what's up? You know, really get a face with a name. And that's like one of the people that I just so admire. Like, I really enjoy his comedy.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had Jeff Friday is the founder of that festival. He's been on.
Yes.
He's been on the show here. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
All right. So last thing I want to ask you about, I feel like, again, because I have seen – I should tell folks, I have not seen you live in person. I've watched as many clips as I could find. But based on that, I feel like I have to ask you, what is your social status? Are you dating? And are you dating, you know, someone who you're seeing the world with, or someone that you're seeing the stars and the moon with?
Both. I finally found a mix, Bob. I found me a black man with some Russian Jewish grandparents. So I am seeing both, okay? He has all the right parts, okay? He has a great financial plan. He is very black from the in his other parts, okay?
From the waist down, you're saying.
From the waist down, you know. There lies the stars and the moon. I finally found it. But, you know, he has a white upbringing, so that's why we're going to last, because I need all my black males to have a white upbringing, okay? I need fathers for my kids. Well, I need one father for my kids, okay? So.
And so he's a good tipper?
He's a great tipper, because don't forget I said, oh, well, you know, I did say he was Russian Jew, you know, raised by Russian Jew. Yeah. But no, great tipper, because, you know, he's basically a white man inside. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's almost your complexion, but, you know, his values, I got to talk. He forgets he black sometimes. He forget I'm black sometimes. Well, he would be like, you know, y'all, you know, he'll look at us. when he sees some black shit on the news, Bob, he'll be like, you know, y'all gotta, y'all. I'll be like, y'all. But look, it works for me because dating a part white man, I can get all my white aggression out, Bob. I'll be like, because I know you people don't like to get emotional around here, but I'm just going to tell you how I feel, you know? He'd be like, all right, now keep those black emotions under control because you know how emotional y'all get. It's great.
That's awesome. I'm really glad to hear that.
Thank you so much.
All right. So as we wrap up, folks can see you at the Hollywood Improv.
Yes, October 29th. You can see me at the Hollywood Improv. Also, too, check me out on DellHarrison.com because I've got my digital web series, Up Late TV Show, that I host with Shaw Hayes and I'm talking about everything that is in the news. Michelle A just had her movie come on Lifetime. Donald Trump and his, you know, 12 hoes popping up. I'm commenting on it all. So that's where you check me out on my, you know, if you just Google me, DellHarrison.com, then everything that I'm doing will come up.
All right. You know, I got to ask you, I hadn't thought of it before, but so we're recording this about 3 weeks out from the presidential election. So Donald Trump's still very much in the air as we talk. Now, if one of those 12 women that had come forward and said that he had sexually assaulted them, if one of those women had been African-American, what do you think the result would be? Would that have affected him, his, you know, 34% of people that like him no matter what? I mean, there's been a lot of talk of some racism, perhaps, supporting him.
You know, I don't...
Would that have helped him or hurt him, I guess I'm asking?
I think it would have did him just the same because his personality is the thing that hurts him the most. It's really not, you know, you got Bill Cosby with, you know, 55 women coming out on him and he still got supporters. So Donald Trump would definitely have the supporters, no matter the race of who he's assaulted, but his personality just is so insulting to watch. You know, he's going to say something racist. He's going to say something sexist. He's going to, you know, this is the white male that we fear as ethnic people being in power because he does not have a clue of how it is to be out here with the real people. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think poor white people, I think they better fear him too because it's not a race thing. It's a he does not like the people at the bottom, you know. So yeah, Donald Trump. I mean, Omarosa. We'll see what happens with her because she's still backing him, you know.
I think she's got a job with him. So
she's cashing checks. So
I was going to say I want to find out how many people who keep coming out supporting him are on the payroll, and then how many aren't? Because I'm figuring most of them are on the payroll, and once he stops paying them, we'll see what they have to say about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, folks, you can see stand-up comedian Del Harrison at her regular gig at the Lab at the Hollywood Improv, or on the road at a comedy club near you. The website is DellHarrison.com. Are you on Facebook, Twitter, things like that?
I'm on everything, and I am D.E.L. Harrison. So follow me on whatever site you're on. I am Del Harrison.
And it's Del Harrison who said those things, Eddie Murphy and Steve Harvey. Don't come looking for me.
Bob, maybe.
I just throw out the questions, and I catch whatever comes out. Del,
I love you, Eddie. I love you, Steve.
We've had a full afternoon together with some technical stuff, and I appreciate your patience and working through it. And delightful to meet you, and thanks for being on Mr. Media today.
Thank you so much, Bob, for having me on Mr. Media.
Turn up the stereo receiver. Mr. Meaty is recorded live before a studio audience full of men and women suffering from a severe outbreak of racism in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Okay, before you go, I just want to remind you that Audible.com was our sponsor today, and you can get a free audiobook, with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow, T-R-Y-N-O-W. Again, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. I don't know about you, but that Johnny Cash biography, as read by Kris Kristofferson, I think I'm going to grab that one right now.